This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Supporters of Israel attacked a pro-Palestinian protest camp at the University of California in Los Angeles. Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen has more.
Demonstrators on both sides sprayed each other with unknown substances and fights broke out. Calm was later restored after police arrived on the scene. The violence followed an announcement on Tuesday by UCLA administrators that the encampment was unlawful and violated university policy. The school's chancellor said it included people unaffiliated with the campus, though he provided no evidence of the presence of outsiders. The October 7th attack on southern Israel by Hamas militants from the Gaza Strip and the ensuing Israeli offensive on the Palestinian enclave have unleashed the biggest outpouring of U.S. student activism since the anti-racism protests of 2020.
That was Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is pushing Israel and Hamas to reach a ceasefire deal. AP correspondent Sagar Magani has that story.
The deal would free hostages and pause the nearly 7 months of Gaza fighting.
No delays, no excuses. The time is now.
In Tel Aviv, Blinken told Israel's ceremonial president Hamas will be to blame if the deal does not happen. The talks appear serious, but there are big differences on a key issue. Hamas wants the Israeli offensive to end if all hostages are freed. Israel's only offering a pause. After a meeting today, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office says he made clear to Blinken Israel will carry out a military operation in Rafah, which it calls Hamas's last major stronghold. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Join VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises as we delve into the heart of the world's most pressing conflicts and crises, from the Israel-Hamas war to the Russian-Ukraine war. This is VOA News. Lawmakers in the European nation of Georgia have moved a step closer to passing a law that critics fear will stifle media freedom and endanger the country's European Union membership bid. Tens of thousands of residents in the capital, Tbilisi, have marched for days against the bill. Opposition party leader Alain Kashdaria says it's about more than just a law.
The oligarch has made it clear it's a geopolitical shift by Georgian dream to drag back Georgia into Russian influence and to close the European future. But the thing is that the majority of this country wants the opposite.
Dozens of people were arrested in the latest rallies. Police used water cannons, tear gas, and pepper spray against the demonstrators. Protesters denounced the bill as the Russian law because neighboring Russia uses similar legislation to stigmatize independent news media and organizations critical of the Kremlin. A third and final reading of the bill is ahead. The U.S. State Department released a statement Wednesday condemning the bill's advancement, calling it Kremlin-inspired foreign influence. A surprise announcement that revealed Haiti's new prime minister is dividing a recently installed transitional council tasked with choosing new leaders for the gang-riddled Caribbean country. VOA's Tommy McNeil reports.
Four of seven council members with voting power said Tuesday that they had chosen Fritz Belizaire as prime minister. Many Haitians were taken aback by their declaration and unexpected political alliance. The council members who oppose Belizaire are now weighing options, including fighting the decision or resigning from the council. Belizaire served as Haiti's sports minister from 2006 to 2011. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Officials with the Kenyan government and the Red Cross said Wednesday that floods and landslides across the East African country have killed more than 180 people since March, with hundreds of thousands forced to leave their homes. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino reports.
Hundreds of thousands have been forced from their homes. Dozens have also been killed in neighboring Tanzania and Burundi. More rain is expected in Kenya in the coming days, according to the country's meteorological department. Torrential rain and floods have destroyed homes, roads, bridges, and other infrastructure across the region. In Kitengela, about 20 miles from the capital, Nairobi, Kenya Red Cross workers on Wednesday were helping rescue those marooned by floodwaters. The death toll in Kenya exceeds that from floods triggered by the El Nino weather phenomenon late last year. Those rains followed the worst drought in large parts of East Africa in decades.
That was Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. International Edition delivers insight into world news through eyewitnesses, correspondent reports, and analysis from experts and newsmakers. This is Richard Green for VOA News.
ceasefire.
The deal is there. They should take it.
South Korea talks about joining AUKUS, the Australian, U.S., U.K. alliance.
Korea is obviously a country with deeply impressive technology where we do have shared values.
And they're too young to vote, but they're learning how to be poll workers.
I always had an interest in politics because I'm a debater, and a lot of it revolves around that. So I was interested to see, like, the democratic process come to life.
Today is Thursday, May 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Israel has made important compromises for a deal that would see hostages released in exchange for a ceasefire. That's the word from U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who was in Israel Wednesday.
Israel has made very important compromises in the proposal that's on the table, demonstrating its desire and willingness to get this agreement and get it done. Now, as we've been saying, it's on Hamas. Hamas has to decide whether it will take this deal and actually advance the situation for the people that it purports to care about in Gaza. There is no time for delay. There's no time for further haggling. The deal is there. They should take it.
Blinken also talked about improving humanitarian access in Gaza.
We have seen in recent weeks real, meaningful progress that is starting to make a difference for people in Gaza. Yesterday we were in Jordan. Some of you saw the trucks being loaded in Jordan. They went through Erez for the first time today, and that's very important because that's direct access to the north of Gaza. The progress is real, but given the need, given the immense need in Gaza, it needs to be accelerated, it needs to be sustained. And as we focus on all of the necessary inputs, the number of trucks that are moving, what matters the most is the impact.
Blinken and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met in Jerusalem for 2.5 hours, after which Israel repeated that the Rafah operation would go ahead despite the U.S. position and a stark United Nations warning that the operation would lead to tragedy. College protests continued in the United States. This one was at New York City's Fordham University, where New York police officers had a significant presence.
Step out of the street!
As student rallies have spread to dozens of schools across the U.S. in recent days expressing opposition to Israel's war in Gaza, police have been called in to quell or clear protests. That was on the campus of the University of Wisconsin. And at the University of Washington in Seattle, pro-Palestinian protesters grabbed Israeli flags from counter-protesters and tore them in half. There continue to be huge crowds of protesters at most of the campuses. South Korea held talks on joining a part of the AUKUS defense deal between the United States, Britain, and Australia. Australian Defense Minister Richard Marlis.
Korea is obviously a country with deeply impressive technology, where we do have shared values, where we have strategic alignment, and where we engage closely together. We already engage closely together in relation to technology. So as AUKUS Pillar 2 develops, I think there will be opportunities in the future, and we're seeing that play out in relation to Japan as well, and we talked about that.
The first stage of the agreement is to give Australia nuclear submarine technology and is limited to that core trio, the U.S., the U.K., and Australia. However, the second stage, or Pillar 2, is focused on sharing military technology across a range of areas, including quantum computing and hypersonic missiles. So let's talk about this. Joining us to do so is Naoko Aoki, an associate political scientist at the RAND Corporation. She specializes in East Asian security issues. So let's talk big picture first, AUKUS is now talking to not only South Korea, but had also announced that they were going to talk to Japan. This makes sense for all of the parties, right?
Yes, I think this is part of a strategic alignment in a way. This is part of a bigger development, which is that countries that are worried about China's aggressive actions and the fast pace of military modernization are coming together in a variety of ways, a variety of coalitions and groupings, some people call it minilaterals, to try to maintain the international order based on international law and maintain stability.
I read a book recently where they postulate that this part of the world is the new Cold War, and they went on to say that Taiwan is the new West Berlin. Do you see it that way?
That's one way of seeing it. I am of the opinion that we should learn from history, but we should not always impose a scenario on a new situation. But I think that there is a point there. I would say that, you know, this is really the interesting thing here is that a lot of the countries that are worried about China, again, are basically coming together in a variety of grouping.
Let's talk about AUKUS specifically. It started out with Australia, the United States, and the United Kingdom. But it makes sense to bring in these countries, right? Let's talk specifically about South Korea. They bring a lot to the table, no?
Yes, it certainly does. South Korea is a very advanced country in terms of technological innovation and industrial capability. So obviously AUKUS, the Pillar 2, because we're talking about Pillar 2, not the Pillar 1 that involves nuclear-powered submarines, but the Pillar 2 participation is about cooperation to develop advanced defense capabilities. So South Korea really fits the bill really well because one example, of course, is South Korea's semiconductor technology. Companies like Samsung is working to mass produce next generation chips, for example. And in terms of defense equipment, more specifically, South Korea is already working on the items that are in the cooperation. There are eight areas of cooperation for AUKUS Pillar 2. And this includes, for example, unmanned underwater vehicles and AI for military use. And those are some of the areas that South Korea is already working on.
There are problems, though, as well. Five Eyes comes to mind.
Yes. I guess I would call it questions. A number of questions that come to mind. One of them would be, you know, how is South Korea going to deal with these? How is it going to deal with the sensitive data and information? Because the three AUKUS countries, the United States, United Kingdom, and Australia, are of course part of the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance. So they are used to sharing information. South Korea is not part of that. So how are the countries going to deal with that? Another question that comes to mind is, for example, the country's export control regimes, South Korea's in particular. You know, the laws, regulations, and policies that govern the export of defense articles and services. How are they going to? How do the laws and regulations impact the cooperation? Is South Korea going to have to change something? So those are some of the questions, the mechanics that need to be worked out should South Korea join AUKUS Pillar 2.
And I would suspect that China is going to react somehow, even by the announcement that they're having this conversation. They have reacted almost to every other thing. We saw this week the Chinese Coast Guard and the Coast Guard of the Philippines have an altercation that followed conversations with the United States and the Philippines.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think the focus, I think, is on China's reaction to this. China has used economic coercion against South Korea in the past, notably when South Korea deployed the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, THAAD. So what China might do is a concern for South Korea and for those in the region.
Excellent. Thank you so much for the time. We'd love to continue this conversation later. I think it's going to be something that we're going to be talking about for quite some time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity.
Naoko Aoki, an associate political scientist at the RAND Corporation. Following these other stories from around the world, South Korea's consumer inflation eased in April for the first time in 3 months. Official data on Thursday shows it's coming in lower than market expectations. The United States on Wednesday issued hundreds of fresh sanctions targeting Russia over the war in Ukraine, an action that took aim at Moscow's circumvention of Western measures, including through China. Also on Wednesday, the United States accused Russia of using the chemical weapon chloropicrin against Ukrainian forces in violation of the Chemical Weapons Convention. Also, Russia, they say, has used tear gas, which is also in violation of the convention. The Arizona Senate voted on Wednesday to repeal the state's 1864 ban on abortion, which would otherwise have taken effect within weeks. State Senator Eva Birch.
I appreciate the passionate religious convictions of members who have risen to announce their faith. I respect it. My beliefs are different from yours. I'm not afraid of the abortions that I had. I do not fear for my soul. They were the right decisions for me, and I don't have to follow your religion in this country.
In the state of Florida, a ban on abortions past 6 weeks of pregnancy took effect Wednesday. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 presidential election, Donald Trump is defending the right of states to regulate reproductive rights. Joe Biden says that decentralized authority threatens women's lives. Here's VOA correspondent Scott Stearns with our story.
The Biden campaign is making reproductive rights a centerpiece of its reelection drive. Vice President Kamala Harris campaigned in Florida the day the state's new abortion law took effect.
This is a fight for freedom, the fundamental freedom to make decisions about one's own body and not have their government tell them what they're supposed to do.
Florida's new abortion law is among the nation's most restrictive and has prompted a November ballot initiative to put abortion rights in the state constitution. U.S. states are making their own abortion laws because a 2022 Supreme Court decision ended federal abortion protections. Trump appointed 3 of the 6 justices who decided that case, and Harris says voters need to hold him accountable.
Across our nation, we witness a full-on assault, state by state, on reproductive freedom. And understand who is to blame. Former President Donald Trump did this.
While Trump says the new Florida law goes too far, he regularly takes credit for this state-by-state approach to abortion. It's the will of the people, he explained in a video on his social media site last month.
Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people. You must follow your heart or, in many cases, your religion or your faith.
At a women's health clinic in Fort Pierce, Florida, this patient fears the new law means more young women will die.
I think it means a lot more deaths, honestly, because 6 weeks is not really a lot of time. And then I feel like abortion is still going to happen, whether it happens legally or illegally. It'll happen, like, on the streets. It'll just be unsafe.
Clinic owner Candace Dye says there was a rush of patients before the new abortion law. For her, a 6-week ban is too restrictive.
And a lot of girls don't even know they're pregnant until they're 6 weeks. You know, they think they're 4 weeks because they haven't seen their period yet. So, and then we do our ultrasound. They're six already, and the patients have to be seen 2 different days.
Outside the clinic, anti-abortion protesters try to engage with each woman who enters. Tammy Holly shares her experience.
I'm here because abortion has hurt me, and I certainly don't want to see other women hurt by abortion. They walk in the door and they never come out the same. No matter how they try to go on with life as normal, they'll never be the same.
While ending abortion motivates many Republican voters, Trump appears mindful of the issue's political vulnerabilities in a close presidential race.
Always go by your heart, but we must win. We have to win. We are a failing nation, but we can be a failing nation no longer. We will make our nation great.
Harris says Trump's Republican allies in Congress want a nationwide abortion ban. Trump has said that's not necessary now that states can make their own abortion laws. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Harvey Weinstein will be retried in New York, according to the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. They said it in court on Wednesday, a week after the state's highest court threw out Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction. Here's Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner.
Harvey Weinstein appeared in a New York court on Wednesday, as prosecutors told a judge they will retry the disgraced Hollywood producer.
Obviously, there's a tremendous sense of relief that we're back here.
Weinstein's attorney, Arthur Idala, spoke to reporters after the hearing.
We're very confident that if it goes to trial, the only words we'll hear at the end of the trial are not guilty.
Weinstein remained silent during the hearing, which comes more than 4 years after his conviction was hailed as a milestone for the Me Too movement. But in a 4-3 decision last week, the New York State Court of Appeals said the trial judge made a critical mistake by letting women testify that Weinstein assaulted them, even though they were not part of the charges he faced. The 72-year-old has been serving a 23-year prison sentence in upstate New York after being convicted in 2020 of sexually assaulting a former production assistant in 2006 and raping an aspiring actress in 2013. According to a spokesperson, Weinstein was transferred to Bellevue Hospital in Manhattan following last week's order. Weinstein was also sentenced to 16 years following a separate rape trial in California. The two sentences cannot be served concurrently. The judge in New York on Wednesday remanded Weinstein back into custody and said he expected to hold a new trial after the Labor Day holiday, but did not set a firm date.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. You know, one of the reasons politicians give for not doing anything to combat climate change is doing things to stop climate change costs too much money, they say. They say it'll hurt the economy. So now there's a new report showing that the average income of people around the world will be cut by about 20% because of climate change. You will make less money. More on this now from Henry Ridgewell.
In the Philippines this week, schools were closed as students and teachers were ordered to stay at home amid temperatures close to 40 degrees Celsius. As many parts of the world experience extreme weather, new research warns that the global impacts of a changing climate are set to cost $38 trillion a year by 2050. That means a reduction in the world's average income of some 19%. Those losses are locked in, says report co-author Maximilian Kotz.
Impacts on the economy are consistent across different emission scenarios.
Climate change, and especially higher temperatures, have been shown to impact worker productivity. The research looked at climate and economic data from the past 40 years and used it to assess future impacts. The report concludes that tackling climate change would be far cheaper than putting up with the economic damage. It says the cost of reducing greenhouse gas emissions would be just a sixth of the $38 trillion impact of climate change by 2050. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
And finally, they aren't old enough to vote, but some high school students in the U.S. state of New Jersey are training to serve as poll workers to help meet the high demand for this year's elections. Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen visited them while they were being trained.
Face up, face down. Just slide it in, and we should hear two beeps.
They aren't old enough to vote, but these New Jersey high school students will take part in the 2024 U.S. presidential election regardless. They will serve as poll workers for the June primary and the November general election after completing this training course. 16-year-old Marguerite Wang said she's excited to participate.
For me, I always had an interest in politics because I'm a debater, and a lot of it revolves around that. So I was interested to see, like, the democratic process come to life, like, before my eyes.
17-year-old Abhinav Kokula said he recognizes the importance of the role.
Especially considering our last presidential election, electoral integrity, I think, is an extremely important part of our democracy that we've kind of taken for granted for so many years, but now it's been thrown into the spotlight.
New Jersey's Bergen County, where they live, is trying to double the number of poll workers it has for the expected high voter turnout.
They're changing the way we voted in New Jersey, right? And this is going to be the first time for a lot of people to vote with the new machines. And the young people having the skills, the technology skills, are going to help those that have some challenges.
Each student will walk away with $400 if they work eight-hour shifts in both the June primary and the November general election.
Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform. Get the app from the Apple Store or from Google. And you can also get your news online from VOA at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walters.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The situation in Cuba right now, economically, socially, with regard to human rights, is an incredibly difficult situation, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs Brian Nichols in a recent interview.
We're seeing a number of factors there. Unreliable electricity delivery, which results in hours of blackouts. Lack of access to fuel for a significant percentage of the population, or prices that are inaccessible. Significant problems with food insecurity in the country. And continued repression and the incarceration of people who have peacefully protested for their basic rights.
A combination of these factors was tragically on display recently when a Cuban court handed down prison terms of up to 15 years for 13 protesters who were found guilty on charges of sedition and sabotage. They were among hundreds of people who took to the streets of the city of Nuevitas in August 2022, protesting severe power outages. In July 2021, anti-government demonstrations broke out throughout Cuba. The response of the government was swift and harsh. Hundreds were sentenced to long prison terms. Human rights organizations estimate that 1,000 political prisoners remain behind bars in Cuba. Writing on the social media platform X, Assistant Secretary Nichols called the sentences for the Nuevitas protesters outrageous. He added, "The Cuban government's continued repression of Cubans striving to fulfill their basic rights and needs is unconscionable." The United States is exploring and finding ways to help the people of Cuba while limiting benefits to the Cuban regime, said Assistant Secretary Nichols.
Such as the transmission of remittances from the United States to Cuba so that families can help each other. I think additional measures to facilitate private sector activity, such as it is in Cuba, is also a positive step that could be important for the future. A significant portion of economic activity in Cuba is already carried out by private entrepreneurs rather than state-owned enterprises.
A more democratic Cuba would be able to address the challenges that its people face, declared Assistant Secretary Nichols. And he said, we encourage the Cuban government to respond to the demands of its people for a more democratic and inclusive society through engagement, dialogue, and democratic reform.
That was an editorial reflecting